once more unto the breach, dear friend.
Else close the wall up without English dead.
Whoa, that was really weird.
Thank you. Yeah. It was a little Scottish brogue came in there.
Okay. I don't know if it was appropriate in Shakespeare, but...
No, it wasn't at all appropriate for Shakespeare.
Anyway, so here we are, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, with another exciting second hour of The Personal Wealth Coach starring Jeff and...
Jake.
McClure. Which you should really be glad that her name is McClure, because actually a number of generations ago, quite a large number of generations ago, it was actually originally McGeolavithir.
Except of McFeangiola.
Right.
That would just be a lot more fun to tell people as we walk up. I think I might get tired of having people ask me
McFeangiola. Oh, wow. That'd be cool. Can you spell that? No.
Nope.
That's because the people who had those names were illiterate.
It is true.
It's why they had such complicated names, because they didn't have to spell them. And then when it came time to do the magic and work the spells,
they said,
"Nope,
lure, there's a lure in there, and there's a mechanism."
I am
McClure.
So glad.
McClure.
McGee was already taken.
Uh-huh. They said McClure.
When Henry VIII's census takers came around, McGee was already taken, and the next syllable is ho.
Mac-ho, no.
We could be Mac Ho.
We'll just take the beginning and the end of the word.
Lure. So lure, that sounds cool. Let's say
McClure. McClure, there we go.
Yeah,
perfect.
That's cool. And it was McClure until we got to the United States.
Well,
To Ireland. And the census takers there put an extra C in it.
Yeah, they're like, I don't want to put an A in here. I'm going to put a C in here
right. Because
you don't know how to spell and I do.
Anyway, this is the Personal Wealth Coach, which not coincidentally is also the name of a registered investment advisor down in Salado, Texas, that does
amazing
investment manages on
purely coincidental
portfolios and so on. Anyway, the telephone number is in here if you'd like to call us on this radio program, 773-1400 or
1-866-597-1400. We're going to talk about the thing that last hour, sequestration.
Sequestration.
Which is another...
Oh, I love that word.
It's another word for Bigfoot. No,
really?
That's Sasquatch. It's an S word.
Sasquestration.
Yeah, sasquestration is when Bigfoots take over Washington, D.C.
Right.
Which is pretty much the same thing as far as I'm concerned. There's a smell associated with both of these.
And what's going to happen starting on March 1st is the government will spend less money, which isn't a big thing. It's like
$92 billion for a year.
I thought it was 85
billion. 87 to 92.
Okay.
It's like these
and it
moving
really,
numbers.
If you spread it across the entire governmental mess, then it wouldn't be a big thing. But...
It gets painful.
Very highly concentrated because it cannot be taken out of Social Security. It cannot be taken out of
Medicare.
It's coming out of Medicare. 2% drop in Medicare payments starting March 1st.
I believe that has to do with Obamacare more than it does to do with sequestration.
Sequestration, I just read just a few minutes ago. What is going to happen is Medicare's portion of the cut, Medicare was not excluded, and Medicare's portion of the cuts starting March 1st is there will be an across-the-board cut in compensation to hospitals, doctors, and so on of 2%. And a lot of Defense Department civilians will be furloughed one day a week without pay, which is probably going to make them relatively unhappy because that's going to mean that they will lose roughly 20% of their pay. It won't be quite 20%, but they will basically get their paycheck at the end, in mid-month and then at the end of the month will be down by 15 to 20%.
Right. What will probably happen is that there will be a request in the departments for people to take furloughs. And those people wouldn't get paid, and the other people would get the same amount.
They're going to lay them off one day a week, basically.
Yeah, and that's the furloughs. That's the, hey, you don't get to work this week. And what they're going to begin with, hopefully, is volunteers. Say, you, and you are volunteered.
And, you know, the fact that the air traffic controllers are among the people. If they all said, oh, we're taking Friday off,
hey,
then the airplanes won't fly on Friday.
Well, just think, if air traffic control isn't working, then that surtax on the plane rides won't be there. So we could save like $5 a plane trip.
No, you save tremendously because the airplane simply won't fly.
Oh, well, I was thinking if we save $5 a plane trip and then you just roll the dice to see if you get there without running mm-hmm. into other planes.
Well, the
think all the money you could save at $5 a trip.
The Daily Oklahoma newspaper reported that at their big airport up there, the night shift simply...
Wait a minute. They have a big airport in Oklahoma?
In Oklahoma City, they have theoretically an international airport. Will Rogers International Airport up there in Oklahoma City.
Uh-huh. Theoretically, it's a big airport.
It actually is a pretty good-sized airport. It's roughly the equivalent of Austin's airport.
Right.
But basically, they're going to shut the tower down in the wee hours of the morning. And any flights that were supposed to come in, like between midnight and 5 a.m. or something, or 6 a.m. or something, just simply won't.
I don't know that there's a whole lot of flights that come in between midnight and 6 a.m. in Austin, so I don't know what they're doing in
actually,
Oklahoma. Maybe FedEx does.
That's UPS, the point. The FedEx,
sort of
UPS, and mail flights.
Right.
U.S. mail flights will have to be. And
wait, let's be PC and female flights as well. FedEx is a female. That's a male for fee.
Is FedEx a female?
It is male for fee.
So it would be
it is definitely female.
Male. Yeah.
And the U.S.
Okay.
Postal Service is male. So we.
Well, what's UPS then?
It's a good question. I guess it is for fee. It would be two females per male.
Okay. That's cool.
Yeah.
I'll accept that. And at any rate, initially you probably won't see a lot happen. And I do know the Wall Street Journal reported that on March 27th, it didn't specify which programs, but there's apparently a series of programs, specific federal programs, that will simply shut down on March 27th. You really won't see, probably, if sequestration continues, and I kind of think it's going to, because I don't think the impact will be huge at the beginning, which will encourage
it's
the people.
It's going to make people to say, all right, we can do this.
The people who want to sequester will be sequestering all over the place.
This is going off the cliff one small step at a time.
Right. And you really won't see it hit until after September 30th, because at that point we will get a full year's reduction in budget. In a lot of areas, the Defense Department is already, they've got the money this year,
mm-hmm.
but they're going to start reducing defense contractors, and they've said that letters are going to go out immediately after March 1st if sequestration's in place to a lot of defense contractors saying that at the end of the fiscal year, their contract ceases to exist.
Now that we've kind of discussed what happens, there's some painful impacts of this. Generally speaking, the two of us in here are very pro small government. The small government is a good thing. We need to go smaller. However, when we're having economic issues where we're recovering and the rest of the world is not, the rest of the world is limping along and we're pulling them with us, reducing expenditures is probably a bad idea. And you can look at any major school of economics, either the ones that the left espouses or the right espouses, and you'll find...
You have left and right espouses?
That's
pretty
bad.
Polygamy.
It's illegal in most countries.
Right.
What you have here out of it is that both major older schools of economics, but all in the middle as well, say that in economic downturns, you don't reduce spending in government. If you want to see what happens when you do that, just go look at Europe. What's happening right now is because of all of the spending cuts, all of this austerity plans that they're doing is being done at the depth of at the depths of a recession. You don't do it then. You actually spend more then. And I realize that people could misconstrue that.
You're sounding very Keynesian here.
Yeah, people can. Well, even Milton himself said that if government is going to spend, it should do it when the recession is on. I mean, it doesn't get more right wing than that. And yet, people in the right wing tend to think that the government shouldn't be involved at all. Milton was very clear that the government needed to be there for regulatory purposes, and that if it was going to cut spending, it should do it in the boom years, not in the lean years.
And we probably, again, sometime towards the end of March is when the impact will start to hit enough to be noticed. Apparently, the Wall Street Journal is now reporting that sequestration will result in a partial government shutdown as of March 27th. Now, whether Congress will actually do something about that or whether they'll be emboldened, I don't know. I'm glad that I'm not in Congress. I really am.
And me too.
But the end result of the cuts is that we will see our governmental expenditures drop by 2.4%. Now, that doesn't sound like a lot, and it isn't, but it definitely is a start in the right direction. And if we were to freeze government expenditures, if let's just say we just keep on this path, we cut 2.4%, and then we do not increase except where it's demanded by law, then over a period of time, what the Republicans are asking for will come to pass, which is we will gradually come into a balanced position over about a 20-year period. Unfortunately, it will also mean that a lot of services that we have come to take for granted will not be there. It certainly won't be there in the quantity. By the way, I can hear you breathing into the microphone there.
That's my Darth Vader impression.
Okay. Will not be there in the quantity that we are expected. For example, there's a pretty high probability that if you show up at the airport for a flight, you know, they say you need to be there at least an hour early. We'll make it 2 hours early because they are going to probably have to cut the number of transportation safety people, officials, by about 20 or 25%. And that's just the reality of government cuts. When we exclude the most expensive programs in the government from the cuts, basically they have to be concentrated somewhere else. And right now what the government is paying in checks or in transfers to Social Security recipients, military retirees, active duty military personnel, you start down the list of where the government actually is paying people. That's not going to be cut. But there will be a lot of programs cut. If you want to apply for a passport, probably you ought to double your lead time in applying for a passport, maybe triple it. If you want to apply for Social Security, if you want to apply for Medicare, the basic services of the government, we're going to see cut pretty substantially. We're also going to see in Bell County, if sequestration stays in place, a year from now, a lot fewer jobs than we've got today. We will probably see, and this is certainly not a certainty,
Certainly not a certainty.
In Bell County, we'll probably see property values decline. We'll probably see, as a result, property taxes decline. Everybody will be happy the property taxes go down, except for the fact that that means our school systems will get less money. So there's a lot of things going to happen over the next year. None of them are going to be a bolt of lightning out of the sky. And maybe it could be a good thing, because we probably, as a nation, need to see the places where we don't even realize that our taxes and the government spending is adding to our local economies and our own personal well-being. You know, really, if you were going to do this in a fair basis, there would be cuts in Social Security, too, at least above a certain level. The fact is they're not going to do that, so a lot of people won't even notice the difference. But it'll be interesting to see how this happens. And if it's painful enough, we'll yell at them and we'll make them fix it. If it's not painful enough, it may just stay in place for a long, long time.
Which, again, may wind up being a good thing if we're careful about it. But it's going to be painful in the process.
It's awkward, but we'll see how it works out. We got a call on 773-1400. You're on the air with the Personal Wealth Coach. Go ahead.
So you are claiming that the cuts are from the current budget and not the amount of increase on each budget?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Okay. I just wanted to make sure, because there are so many congressmen and representatives of the Senate that are saying that it's a cut in the growth.
No, 2.4% cut. In you know, you look at the $85 billion, you look at the total money, amount of money that the government has got set to spend this year, you cut that by 2.4%, that's not a cut in growth.
Yeah, and what we're talking about is the number that began the whole thing was a $600 billion cut. It's not a cut in growth that they were talking about here, although, because strangely enough, the growth is still going to be there, so it's still possible for us to look at it over a period of time and say that only happened from the growth.
So how much did it grow from the last budget? How much increase
the budget,
in the budget did we grow?
The budget this year, the budget this year is relatively flat to the budget last year.
Yeah, that was an intentional
what
move.
We don't know is what the budget is for next year, because we haven't even really passed a budget for this year, so it'd be really hard to tell what the budget
right,
is for next year.
Right, the Senate hasn't passed a budget in, what, 3 or 4 years. But what I'm saying, there's people in my age group, in the 60-year age group, that are tired of this BS and do want that to go through. And, yeah, it may hurt, but we're tired of all this game playing.
Well, let me put...
This budget is absolutely ridiculous.
How old are you?
I'm 60.
Okay, you're coming up on the time where you withdraw Social Security. One of the biggest chunks of the budget increase, one of the biggest chunks in the budget increase that occurs each year is a combination of Medicare and Social Security that goes up at least with inflation with nobody doing anything. And then, of course, military
pay
goes up.
New retirees are coming into the mix regularly.
So,
and the baby boom population is hitting their point where Social Security is going to start coming out, which means that even if the rest of the budget doesn't move at all, we're going to have growth in the budget.
Well, there's a crucial element here that I think everybody needs to understand. When people say this is just a cut in the growth, there's a tremendous number of programs in the United States government that if the consumer price index goes up 1.5%, then the spending goes up. But that's
exactly
not really an increase in spending.
That's inflation.
That is simply keeping the dollar value of the payments constant. So somebody can say, if our cuts are not greater than inflation, it's just a cut in the growth rate.
Except that if
it isn't.
Just sticks to inflation, that it's a flat budget.
You know how you can tell when a politician is lying?
His mouth is moving.
No, see if you can hear anything from
him. Oh, that's probably good too. Well, he could be writing.
That's what I mean. Basically, if you're reading
if he's
or hearing anything that a politician is saying in a news conference,
yeah,
you can almost be certain
it's being tilted in their favor.
That it is a half truth or sometimes an out and out lie.
They don't use
that term anymore in Washington. They don't, even when somebody comes up with an out and out lie, they don't call it that anymore.
This budget, the one that's taking place this year, that is sort of kind of passed, but it's kind of omnibus spending type thing. It's still not a real budget. With sequestration will be less than what we spent last year in real numbers, absolute numbers. And that's a first for a while. It's been a long time since we've done that. Is it going to be painful? Yes. There's going to be...
And it's going to be more painful for Bell County probably than any other area outside of maybe the District of Columbia in the United States.
One of the big issues here is that part of the reason that the spending is way up and out of control is we've been fighting two wars, and we've been allocating to the budget outside of the normal budgetary process large amounts of money to defense. That's not me saying it's a good or bad thing. That's just what's happened. It's there. We've paid for this, and so budget has gone up, and that amounts to about $500 billion a year. When we're talking about the costs involved, that's a huge number. When we're talking about sequestration of $83 to $93 billion, depending on what numbers are used at what time, half of that coming from defense in a given year, what we're talking about is the numbers are so big it's hard to even begin to comprehend. Well, on a budget of $3.5 trillion, how much is $90 billion going to hurt? a lot. It can really hurt a lot, but it can. It's still not a huge portion of the budget. It's just that that's a lot of billions of dollars, and billions are not little things.
And if you, you know, Temple right here won't be quite as much impacted by the defense cuts
as
but the
Coppers Cove and
I'll Plain. Assure you the 2% cut in payments to Medicare
that's going to be
the start. In other words, each payment that comes in, each dollar amount payment following March 1st that comes in to Scott and White from Medicare, which is their number one source of income, will be cut by 2%. And that means that Scott and White probably will need to look around and cut its budget by 2% or more. And the end result of that will be that there will be people laid off. There will be people not hired. It's just one of those things that buckle your seatbelts, folks, and get ready for some unpleasantries. We have grown used to living based on tax dollars coming back. And again, I want to emphasize in Bell County, which is a certain irony here because Bell County is so thoroughly Republican and fiscally conservative, and any poll you would run in Bell County says cut the government spending.
Right.
And yet Bell County is one of the biggest recipients per capita
government spending.
Of government spending in the United States. Outside of the District of Columbia, I think Bell County is number one. And that means the impact will be felt more intensely here. And as a result, you'll probably see higher property taxes. And you will see some issues with schools, and you'll see lower home prices.
Let me address that, the philosophical approach here. It sounds like we're calling Bell County hypocritical. We are absolutely not. We talk about this on the radio a lot, where we talk about the people in the Tea Party and the people in the military areas that have the military retirements and things. And we say, look, this is coming from the government, and they're talking about cutting government spending. Let me emphasize some things here. The reason why the conservatives involved in the military were involved in the military is because they were intent on sacrificing for their country. They earned every bit of that retirement in sacrificing for their country. It's not like we're saying this is unearned. We're simply saying that it is an expenditure of the government. And anyone that knows us very well at all knows that we are strong supporters of defense, strong supporters of the rights that are due to veterans. This is not something that we hold lightly at all. And it's funny that the number of times we talk about this, and I mention things like defense spending as being part of the reason why we're in so much debt right now, and people, for some reason, think that I said in saying that I don't like defense, or that you don't like veterans, or that we
think a veteran.
That veterans shouldn't get retirement or something. That's absolutely not what we're saying. In fact, we're not really espousing an opinion here. If you listen to what we're talking about, what are the impacts that will occur if sequestration happens. We're not saying we think it should or it shouldn't. In fact, we've said there's going to be good things and bad things that happen. Small government is good, and it's dangerous to do this at a time of recovery. We say all these things, but the end result of what we want is a smaller government over a long period of time. I just hope that we're doing it in a measured way rather than, and you can't really do a measured political process. I think it's more about emotional political process, but the idea here is that now is probably not the best time to do massive cuts. These aren't massive cuts, but they could become so. Boy, oh boy, did I say enough on the other hands without using the words on the other hand? Anyway, I was looking at Milton Friedman's quotes and in his writings while you were having that conversation there. And Milton Friedman is the man probably with the most credit for saying government should be completely out of the economic world. It shouldn't be involved in the market. It shouldn't be involved in many aspects of free market economics. It goes back to the laissez-faire attitude. Thomas Jefferson was same kind of concepts. Thomas Jefferson and Milton Friedman were also quite clear that revenue needed to be brought in by the government. Milton Friedman and Thomas Jefferson both said that they thought that taxes should be very low, that any chance that taxes could be cut, they should be. But recognizing that the spending being done by the government shouldn't be cut in the middle of a recovery is something that was kind of blatant and obvious to them both. If you're cutting into the economy in any section of it when it's trying to recover, it's not going to be healthy.
Now, I was talking about the various departments are going to be cut
a moment ago.
Kind of.
Sure.
I finally found an article on that. Basically, there's a continuing... Now, this is something to watch for. The government is running on a continuing resolution. It's called an omnibus... They have the continuing resolution and omnibus spending bill instead of budgets. I'm really interested in seeing, because the continuing resolution, as it turns out, dies on March 27th. There really will not be...
There's no budget, no omnibus, no nothing going forward.
The government spending, the authorization for the government to spend money dies on March 27th. Did you get that?
Yep.
Now, there are certain excluded areas from there by law, things like the pay to military personnel and so on. But, for instance, to pay the people in the Medicare administration who send out the money to the hospitals, the authorization to pay those people goes away on March 27th. So this is an interesting, this is going to be an interesting thing to see. If sequestration goes through, but the House passes a continuing resolution that restores spending across the board, this is going to be interesting, watch this space, then they will have supported sequestration but jacked spending back up to the point where sequestration will happen, but it will have no effect. So it's one of those things you want to keep your eye on, because basically what's happened over the last several years is the House has made a lot of really loud noises about cutting spending, and then in the literally wee hours of the morning passes a continuing resolution or an omnibus spending bill that nobody's read that jacks spending back up again to, in some cases, higher than it was before. So that'll be an interesting thing to see, because it will be a typical political move. I was trying to understand why the members of the House are so comfortable with sequestration. I was trying to understand why John Carter is so comfortable with sequestration, knowing what it's going to do to Bell County. And I suddenly realized, I found this in Slate just a minute ago, that they have the opportunity on the 27th of March to basically, through a quick We Are the Morning continuing resolution, restore all the funding that they took away. So we'll see how that works out. So we'll see what happens. If they're serious about it, then what will happen in the continuing resolution, they will give the government less money than they gave them last year, and we'll continue down the road. If not, if they just don't pass anything, then on March 27th, all except the vital services of the government will shut down, and that'll be an interesting thing to go. Why is the stock market not reacting violently to this?
Good question.
I think I've got a solution.
I've got some as well, but you're pregnant with thought. I can see it in your eyebrows.
Watch
that's
your
where
language.
You, that's where you hold your thought pregnancy.
Really?
Yeah, your eyebrows bulge upward.
Well, I think what's happened is we have been threatened so many times with the potential for a government shutdown or not paying our debts or whatever by the Republicans in the House, that mm-hmm. the market is basically saying, okay.
It's kind of like a car alarm that keeps going off. I think all car alarms should be replaced with a young boy's voice yelling, wolf, wolf,
you know, and
wolf.
This, by the way, this has been my point over the years. If the House of Representatives really wants to cut government spending, it's a very, very simple process. They pass a budget that reduces government spending and specifically targets the programs they're going to cut, which they don't. And why haven't they done it? Very simple. They would take the heat for cutting very expensive programs like Medicare, and they can't blame it on the president if they pass it. The very expensive programs that are putting us in deep trouble, they'd take the hit for cutting those programs. Pass it and go home. If they're serious, get serious about the budget.
Do it.
Write a budget that is realistic, that they can live with and they can take responsibility for. Pass it, send it to the Senate, and go home. Then if the Senate doesn't pass it, if the president doesn't sign it, the government shuts down. They are, frankly, many Republicans have spoken about this, and they're terrified of that idea because Newt Gingrich tried it, and the Republicans got the blame for it. Well, that's the point. If they're not willing to take the responsibility for it, then they shouldn't holler. But the bottom line to it is, step up to the bat, pass a budget that reflects the way they think the government ought to spend money. That's their constitutional responsibility. Send it to the Senate and then go home. And if the government shuts down, the government shuts down because they passed a budget. And there is the budget, and the Senate and the president can either accept their budget or they can shut the government down. And yeah, that's not a very pretty picture, but it'd get the job done. You are listening to the Personal Wealth Coach. Telephone numbers in here, 773-1400 or
1-866-597-1400.
I think we ought to talk about investing.
What? Usually we have commercials that break up this monotony of our voices moving back and forth. But, you know, commercials, that would be capitalistic, and that's not something that we want to endorse here on. Wait a minute. That's exactly what we want to endorse.
Yeah, exactly. And I'd love to
play. The commercials are broken.
And theoretically we could play some music, but we don't have any music to play. And playing 3 minutes of bagpipe.
People either love it or hate it. And in the process of hating it, they might cause it to really be an exiting
show.
We could
really get something serious. We have a caller on 773-1400. You're on the air with the Personal Wealth Coach. Go ahead.
Morning, Jeff. Morning, Jake.
Good morning.
I was just sitting here listening to all this stuff you were talking about.
You're the one.
And, you know, I may have made a mistake in my figures here, but best I could tell, it kind of looked like we're talking about a 2% cut.
In what?
In the government spending.
2.5, actually, overall. It's $44 billion this year because it's only half a year. But beginning next year, it's a 2.5% cut.
Well, okay. I got the numbers that I used out of this article in yesterday's Temple paper.
Mm-hmm.
And $85 billion from a $3.6 trillion budget.
Mm-hmm. The thing, though, is that the $85 billion is only for half of the year. So it would only be half of the 85 because the budget cycle is a September thing instead of a between March and September. So we've only got 6 months involved.
Fiscal year.
Yeah, fiscal year is different. We've got 6 months of it, so it's going to be half of that, which is why the numbers fluctuate so wildly from one media source to the other, because it all depends on when sequestration actually happens.
Anyway, you had a question?
Well, like I say, I figured it's 2%.
Right.
And so, okay, if I was off a half a percent, so what?
Yeah, no big deal. It's only a few $100 billion, no big deal.
Right.
my point is this. I know, I've heard the number somewhere, and I don't recall how much it is. I know that under the president, during the time he's been in office, he has increased some significant number of people on the federal payroll.
I don't think that's true. It's the other way around.
Yeah, if you look at the federal payroll has dropped drastically. That's the one area of unionized work that has been dropping drastically. You can look at union figures.
Yeah, under George W. Bush, the federal payroll went up rather very substantially, but it has been coming down ever since Obama's been in office. And coming down pretty fast, too.
That's, I guess I'm... I don't know what I heard.
And there's a lot of people who say that he's expanding the government, he's doing this, he's doing that.
Well, he's not. That's exactly what I think.
But he's not. I mean, you get the impression, but if you actually go to the Office of Management and Budget, which works for the president, you go to the Congressional Budget Office, you go to the Commerce Department, you go to any of the
Census Bureau.
You go to any of the organizations out there, and you can. What's happening in the employment picture is very simple. Since President Obama took office, private employment is up very substantially. Government employment is down very substantially. And the reverse occurred during the 8 years of George W. Bush. And it isn't a matter of the president hiring people or firing people, by the way. The House of Representatives has to originate every spending bill. And the House either authorizes spending for increasing the size of government, or it doesn't. And yeah, the president can propose a budget and say, I would like to have 100,000 more people working for the government, but if the House doesn't pass it, I mean, the president's budget is almost always DOA, dead on arrival. During George W. Bush, we had a whole new cabinet-level department come into existence, Department of Homeland Security. Yeah. And we hired and you go to the airport, and all those people that say TSA on there, they are all federal employees.
Well, we've got a whole new agency now that I think about it. I just talked to them the other day.
Who's that?
The MFPB or whatever it is, protect the, I wanted to get a reading on from one of the agencies, like TransUnion or something like that. They're not listed
okay.
in the phone book.
Okay, the organization you're talking about is not a governmental agency.
Oh,
those are private.
I'm not talking about TransUnion being a government agency.
Okay.
What I'm talking about is the way I got in touch with TransUnion.
Uh-huh.
The only way I was able to find out where they were, what their phone number was to call this, I can't remember the numbers,
the Consumer Protection
acronym
Agency?
Or whatever it is. Consumer Financial Protection Agency.
Oh, yeah. Well, now, it's an agency, not a department. In other words, it's not a cabinet-level department. And
it's an agency that didn't exist.
Right. It certainly did not.
President Obama's reign.
That's right. It did not exist. It was passed by Congress into existence. It exists today. It is funded by the House of Representatives. And it isn't a very big agency, by the way. But under George W. Bush, we got a whole new cabinet-level department. And so he hired a whole bunch of people to staff the airports and Homeland Security, and he hired a tremendous number of people in the Defense Department, obviously. I say he proposed it to Congress. Congress passed the bill to hire them. And what's happened over the last 4 or 5 years, a little over 4 years now, is government employment has dropped every quarter.
Now, let me give you the actual numbers here. Looking at the Census Bureau. The Census Bureau puts together civilian employment for the federal government. So we're not talking about armed forces. And strangely enough, civilian employment includes the Coast Guard now because of Department of Homeland Security. So Secret Service and Coast Guard and Customs and all that good stuff is all included in here. I would have considered Coast Guard to be military, but Homeland Security's taken them. And in 2011, which is the last year that the Census Bureau has come out with the numbers, the civilian employment of the U.S. government in March was 2.8 million people. In 2009, it was 2.8 million people. In 2007, it was 2.7 million people. And we can go back to 2006, 2.7 million. So it's about 100. Yeah, that's just the civilians. That's about 100,000 more people. Now, if you look at the growth in population that we've had over the same time period, as a percentage of the people out there, the government has actually shrunk. And that's something, again, the Census Bureau has all this information, and I can pull this all up.
But what's happened is the Defense Department has shrunk. And as it continues to shrink, then the total number of government employees shrinks.
Correct. And that's not counting local governments. The Census Bureau also has information on that, and that has shrunk drastically over the same period.
And it's federal money to the local governments that's been drying up mainly, which is what has caused them to not have as many people working.
So the numbers themselves are publicly available, and people go out there and they say that Obama has increased the size of government. Yes, spending is up. But the actual size, the employment in government, it's flat or a little bit down when you look at the rate of increase in population.
But again, remember
some
that
other activity too. Now.
Right.
Remember that the president cannot increase spending.
Only Congress can do that.
Only Congress can do it, and the House of Representatives has to originate the bill.
Well,
and the fact that we have this year we're flat spending according, and people go, well, look, the president's doing this great thing. It's the deficit's not increasing any more than it did last year. And I go, well, last year was a record number. If we just stay at the record, it's probably not a good thing long term. So having said all of that about flat numbers in the civilian governmental employee and so on, government itself is shrinking. The payments that the government is making is still extremely high. It's not as high as we've ever seen. People talk about this is the highest government has ever been. No. All you have to do is go back to, as a percentage of GDP, look at what we spent in World War II, and you will see that we are nowhere near the amount that we have in the past spent.
Well, yeah.
And that's just reality, but it's hard for that kind of reality to be put out on a soundbite. Anytime somebody says, if you adjust for inflation and apply real dollar, somehow the soundbite people go to sleep and they, I don't want to quote this fella.
You know, and let me say something else about government spending. It is normal for government spending to be high during economic slowdowns. And it is certainly well within reason if we were to taper off our spending. Shoot, if we were to do something, Representative Ryan recommended something, a very simple issue, and that is taper down defense as we back out of these wars and freeze the rest of government spending. Well, the problem is, of course, that means the people who have military retirements, the people who have their Social Security would not get their annual raises.
That's going to cause people to be upset.
I have heard a lot of people, including active Tea Partyists, who are very, very upset that they're not getting a big enough raise every year in their retirement income.
Right. Or even, I mean, just think of the Facebook type of response that if one active duty service member in Afghanistan says, my pay raise has been canceled. Just think of the immediate emotional response on the right. That's what we're talking about here.
Well, yeah.
Anyway.
I want to talk about another thing, too.
All right.
And that
I want to talk about
market.
Something, too. The market? What about the market? I like it.
Well,
it's a good market.
I can't fuss. I told somebody recently that my feeling was that one reason the market's doing as well as it is where else are you going to put your money?
In the bank.
What kind of interest can you get? In bonds.
You get a lot of lack of interest.
But the whole point is that right now we have, as a percentage of total money invested and saved, we're teetering in the United States. We're somewhere around a record percentage in zero interest cash positions.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And the money, for example, that's been coming into the stock market this year has not been coming out of the bond market because the bond market continues to have positive inflows, big ones.
Really?
It's coming out of cash. And we have huge quantities of cash sitting around in the United States, which is why interest rates are only going to remain at zero as long as there's huge quantities of cash sitting there. Once the cash begins to move to the market, whether it's the bond market or the stock market, and I'm not real crazy about it going to if you go to the bond market, you probably need a good psychiatrist. But the money that's moving into the stock market now is coming out of cash positions not out of the bond market. And so what we've got is an unusually low price-to-earnings ratio in the market, in the stock market, because people are sitting on cash. And why are they sitting on cash? Because they think something disastrous is going to happen. And whatever disaster it is that is going to happen will cause the market to collapse. And this is what I really think is funny. I've had people who've called me up and said, I want to liquidate everything and put it in cash because I think the dollar is going to collapse. Do you understand that that might not be totally logical?
Well,
I want to take everything and put it in dollars because the dollars are going to collapse.
Yay!
Yeah.
And they just don't get that.
Seems like that is a very normal thing.
They were listening. They got something from Newsmax or Max, or they heard something on a talk show or something that the dollar was about to collapse in value because of all the money that the Fed has been printing.
So they get out of stocks and go into cash.
So they move all of their money into the dollar, which is potentially going to collapse, according to them.
Except that. There's a recognition that the dollar is one of the safest places to be.
Right.
So they're afraid of the dollar, so they run to the safe place, which is the dollar.
Which is what they're afraid is going to collapse.
Amazing to me.
And what I really think is funny is the people who say the government is about to blow up, the government's going to shut down, I want to move my money to insured, guaranteed positions insured by the FDIC.
Right. Which is
Believe me, I get these calls.
When I say that the economy and the market is counterintuitive, this is what I mean.
You know, this is the time, and I'll just flat say it to anybody. If you're a long-term investor, any investments that you have in a diversified, well-allocated, I knew we were going to get to the subject later.
Yes.
Stock portfolio is going to be an investment that you will look back in 10 years or so and say, man, was I a genius to invest in 2013.
We also advise our clients to have bonds in there, but they're very carefully chosen.
Yep.
With short maturities, short duration.
I don't know.
This is something that I see so much of lately. Our clientele is fairly well-to-do. And the number of people that are moving towards municipal bonds right now that are paying between 6% and 8%, that are saying this is ultra safe, it's governments, and it's tax free, and I'm looking at them and I'm trying to begin, where do I even start explaining that when you have a high yield on a bond? First off, municipal bonds should have a lower yield than a corporate bond. When you're talking 6% to 8%, that's a really, really high interest rate.
But they're insured by a bankrupt company.
Right. There's a company that's insured. And I saw one recently. It has a AAA rating from Moody's, and it's paying 6%, and it matures in 2023, and the price on the thing was about 75, which is a quarter less than it should be. And I pointed all of this out.
Which is why it's paying 6%.
Right. Well, no, the 6% is that was the coupon rate. So if you actually look at what it's paying as a yield to maturity, if it ever does mature, it's significantly more than 6%. And people look at that and they say, tax-free, and, this looks great. And the problem is that the only reason why the market is requiring them to pay a high interest rate is because the market thinks they're not a good risk.
Yep.
It's kind of like if you had a AAA, the equivalent of a AAA rating credit on yourself as a person, you've got a high credit score, and you go to the bank and you say, I want a mortgage, and the bank comes back and says, all right, I've got a choice for you on your 30-year mortgage. It's a fixed rate. You can either choose the 3% or the 6%. Which do you choose? It's kind of a no-brainer, folks. You choose the 3%, and the same is true in bonds. If they can get the money at a lower interest rate, they will. It's not a tough question for them.
And it's just there are just a lot going on in the market right now. But, and I want to emphasize this, in the midst of danger, the key is good diversification.
There's a key in the midst of danger.
Right. If you sense fear in the market, and that's very rational, And if a person is trying to invest, and I'm kind of talking to everybody out here, obviously, right now, not just you, caller. If you're trying to invest, then there's something called asset allocation that historically has worked better than anything else. Is it perfect? No. Does it mean you can dodge a market collapse like 2007 through 9? No. It just means that if you hang on to it, you have an extremely high probability of coming back out of it again and being better off than you were when you went in. But the bottom line to all of this is that there is a huge disconnect between reality and political rhetoric. And unfortunately, we don't have a Walter Cronkite out there who sincerely makes an effort to balance everything and has the credibility to say that's the way
it is.
It is, or that's the way it was.
And that's the way it was.
And we don't have that. And so it's up to us now to dig around out there and to figure out what's going on or hire someone. And I don't mean somebody who offers their services for free. Pay a fee. If you've got enough money invested, this is a commercial. If you got enough money invested that your life depends on it, your livelihood depends on it, you really need to be hiring an independent certified investment advisor. And we're out of time.
Thank you very much for the call. As usual, you stimulated us.
Thank you for jolting our brains. Yes, we feel very stimulated. We feel very stimulated after talking to you.
Okay.
Talk to you later.
Next week.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
I do. I feel very stimulated.
Very stimulated. It's very stimulating.
It's very stimulating talking to you. That's, by the way, from the movie The Labyrinth.
It's so stimulating being your head.
It is. Yes, indeed. Yes. Put your money in the cup. You are listening to the Personal Wealth Coach. We are more than one thing, and I just got through tooting our horn about the fact that we are,
or at least tooting,
an investment advisory firm. We're fiduciaries. We work for our clients, not for some corporation. And we are obligated, because we are registered, to serve our clients as fiduciaries acting in their best interests. And we think we do a pretty good job of that. And we've studied the science of it, and both Jake and I are certifiable and certified.
Very.
For different aspects of that.
So if you would like to contact us off the air,
yeah,
we've got voicemail waiting locally at
947-1111. Now, I got that number, 947-1111, so I could remember it. So you should be able to remember it too, 947-1111.
You can also reach it toll-free, voicemail at 800-914-7526. That's 800-914-PLAN. You can also email us at Jeff or Jake at tpwc.com.
It's easy for you to say.
And we have podcasts available on our website, thepersonalwealthcoach.com or tpwc.com, where you, if you have not reached the appropriate level of insanity by listening to us live, you are quite willing to
listen to us dead.
Listen to us dead. If, right. If you so choose, the recorded episodes are available for your listening insanity. And we actually have no station ID, so you're listening to KTEM 1400.
Yeah, News Radio 1400. News for Radio 14, is that correct? News Radio 1400.
I guess so. I don't know if that's the right way to say it anymore. But until next week, this has been the Personal Wealth Coach.